With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We're taking a break from the podcast for just a second. I wanted to let you know that I know what you're thinking right now. Ever since basketball came back, you can't get buckets out of your head. And we're not just talking about basketball buckets. We're talking about Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets. You watch them, you crave them, that's how it works. I get it. You know, it happens to me all the time. 1 minute, I'm talking about buckets on the podcast. The next minute, I'm daydreaming about the $10 Mighty Bucket for two. I mean, how could you get your mind off four pieces of chicken, two original recipe tenders, two individual fries, two dips, and of course, a popcorn chicken? But don't worry, it's normal. It even happens to most NBA players during games. So, just means you're hungry. Order your bucket online at kfc.ca and get it before tip-off. Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on the podcast this week, one of my favorite people in the Raptor game, Zarar Siddiqui of Raptors Republic. Zarar, what's going on, buddy?
Man, I think I'm over the Celtics loss. You know, it took less time than expected, to be honest with you. For whatever reason, I can't explain it. Maybe over the quote-unquote summer, I'll parse that more. But I'm kind of over it. I think Kawhi losing last night definitely helped a little bit. You know, so I'm good, man.
No, it was good. I wanted to touch on that. First off, actually, with the Celtics, see, that's the thing. I was a little surprised when you said that about the Celtics because I know, you know, this is like old days of Raptors Republic. The Celtics were not referred to by their full name, the Celtics. There was a different name. Just, you know, to keep it PG, we're just going to not review that. But there was a different name for the Celtics back then. Yeah. And then, yeah, the Kawhi thing, I'm happy you brought that up because, you know, I didn't necessarily need to have the title validated. You know, I felt happy with the championship. I feel satisfied. But the fact that Kawhi left and, you know, decided to walk away from a championship team on his own accord, not even just forget signing a 5-year deal. He could have just run it back 1 year and defended his title. He chose not to do that. Goes to the Clippers. And then to lose in that fashion, I mean, it's just, I love Kawhi. That's the thing. I love Kawhi, but that rest of that Clipper team, they're nobodies. They're a bunch of clowns. And they look like it in the last three games.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think I needed Kawhi to validate any sort of title thing for me. I don't think it was ever about that. I think it was just, it was more about, hopefully he realizes how dumb he was in making his decision, right? From a basketball perspective, this home stuff, whatever. I mean, I don't know where the soft stuff goes, but just from a pure basketball perspective, I hope he realizes that in the East, he could have walked to the NBA finals, walked to it.
Yep.
And I think the Boston series kind of showed that how easy it is to actually come out of the East this year. With Kawhi, there's no doubt about it. So I'm hoping that exit kind of makes him reflect a little bit on what the opportunity to returning to the finals that he gave up. Not so much that he left Toronto and all that, but it's just that maybe he has a little bit of self-reflection on there. And I 100% agree with you, man. I think the rest of the Clippers team is basically trash. And I've never been a Doc Rivers fan. So there's a lot of Schadenfreude there.
Yeah, to become the first coach to blow 3-1 leads is an amazing stat. I don't think anyone else will even get into a position to – once you blow your first 3-1 lead, your job's already in trouble. If you blow three of them, I don't know, man. Not many coaches are going to last that long. But, yeah, it's just – you know, that whole franchise is just kind of rubbing the wrong way the whole season. They kind of acted like they had done something when you're literally the Clippers. Like, you didn't see the Raptors acting this way after the Raptors, you know – I mean, got past the second round last year or even got to a game seven. Like, these guys are just, they're dancing, they're prancing. There was a shot of their girlfriends and wives on the bench with Lawrence Frank. You know, have that weird little seating area. And they were all jamming and dancing as well when they were up 3-1. You know, up like, I think, 19 points against the Nuggets in game three or the third quarter.
That's the thing. It's unbelievable. The Clippers. Like, it's the Clippers, man. Yes. I mean, and sometimes we lose sight of the fact that it's the goddamn Clippers. And for years, their best player was Lamond Murray.
Yeah, see, I don't even know who that is.
he got traded to the Raptors. Lamar Murray got traded to the Raptors as, I think, support for, I don't know, some Babcock era deal. And he was supposed, he was going to be our like scorer to support Bosch. And he ended playing like I don't know, half a season or whatever. And then when they signed Kawhi, I thought they acted like they had won the title.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
With the whole press conference with like Bomber hugging everybody. It's like that looked like a title celebration press conference.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
I just signed a guy and I'm going to combine a bunch of people who've never played together. And then you talk, and if that's the cake, the gravy is you know, playoff P, missing everything from three. And like I had friends, man, who won a lot of money on Bet365 by betting under on how many threes Paul George would hit.
Ooh.
Because even betting companies were overestimating his ability to play. And I know a couple of people who made a killing just by going field goals made under on Paul George. And that was...
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you probably played basketball for a long time in your life. You probably shot a fair number of baseline jumpers. It's not easy. There's no backboard. Have you ever hit the side of a backboard on a baseline jumper before? It feels like physically difficult.
I have. I'm not going to lie. I have. Many times.
All right. Well, at least, you know, Kawhi didn't leave a championship team to play with you on the RR squad. But enough about the Clippers and Kawhi. Look, listen, you know, it could have been they could have ran it back. He chose not to. It is what it is. Raptors end up losing in seven, just like Kawhi did in the second round. So, you know, that's something to reflect on. But there is actually a couple of things I want to get to in terms of news items for this week, because surprisingly busy news week. So just in the first 3 days of this week alone, you have, first off, Nick Nurse receiving a contract extension to, you know, further his coaching career with the Raptors. He had one more year left on his deal. After the three-year deal he signed following Dwayne Casey's exit. And, yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on Nick Nurse getting this extension?
I mean, did we have any other option?
No, of course not.
I mean, so there you go. I mean, the worst thing you can do is have a coach or any player with the threat of job security looming over their head. Mm. Because if you have that, then that takes away from your day-to-day performance. It's like, it's no different than an employee in a company that you might work for. Like, if they don't know they're going to be here in a couple of months, well, you know, their state of mind isn't going to be right. So giving an extension and peace of mind and some stability to a person, and it's not just about the money or the length of deal. It's also like he has a family and you want to make sure like your kids are going to the same schools over the next 3 years. So once you factor that in, and if you look at how much a coach makes relative to everything else, it's you have to do it because you're also developing a good relationship with the guy, right? Mm-hmm. And he's doing work for Canada Basketball. So,
yep.
So he definitely has invested long-term in the country. And I'd say the worst thing you can do is kind of be like, have a half measure on your side. I think you got to go all in on this one. And frankly, it doesn't even cost that much, right? So it's not like it counts against the cap or anything like that. So this is a no-brainer to me.
Yeah. And on top of all that, he deserved it. You know, the craziest stat that I saw was that he already has more playoff wins than any other Raptor coach. Like, yeah. Dwayne Casey was leading this team to the playoffs.
I mean, Casey was leading this team to the first round of the playoffs. That's where he was leading them over and over again.
It's hard to rack up a lot of wins if you just go to the first round.
It also shows how little success he had in that first round.
Yeah. That Wizards series is still the darkest I've ever been as a Raptor fan. After game three, I had to take a GO bus. Normally, I was traveling from Hamilton to Toronto for work that year because I was still in school. And normally I would catch the last like bus that goes direct from Hamilton to Toronto. That's like 40 minutes. But that game ended really late. I had to work late. So then I had to take the bus that stops at every single stop in between. So it took like 2 hours.
Yeah.
That was one of the worst nights I've ever had as a Raptor fan, just after game three.
I remember after game three, the 3-0, we were down 3-0 in that series. And I think Blake, who used to write for RR at the time, I think he had a bit on CTV News. Like to analyze like game four, right? And I remember him and I talking at the time, like, hey man, what are you going to talk about on this TV? What are you going to like give them hope? He's like, the fuck, what am I going to say here, right? And I remember that clip of Blake trying to add a level of positivity on CTV News, but just you could see the pain inside him just reflect on the TV, even though, you know, like he was trying to be positive there. So that's my memory of that series. And of course, You know, Bradley Beal running circles around DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
Jesus.
No, I mean, the best was
one. And that's what this series looked like a little bit, man, after game two.
Yeah, I know.
Just replace Brad Beal and John Wall with Tatum and Brown.
That's the mental toughness, though. That's the difference. That's the maturity in Kyle. I mean, I think Kyle's also just improved as a player straight up, but that's just the difference. And I think also this is why you build teams that play, you know, better on defense. Like, this is why you prioritize defense, because defense will always keep you in the series. Like, the Raptors were absolute garbage in game seven. Like, the 18 turnovers for like 30 something points for the Celtics. That's why the Celtics won. It's not because, you know, the Celtics were like dominant offensive or anything like that. Yeah. But even still, the Celtics didn't have a single made basket for the last 5 minutes of game seven. And the Raptors had, you know, a couple inches for Norman Powell gets the ball on the backboard. That's a tie game. So,
yeah, this is an entire series decided by a possession, right? Mm-hmm. The seven games ultimately were decided by a possession. Mm-hmm. And you can point to so many things that could have gone, you know, the Raptors' way in game two. Game two is the one that really hurts, to be honest with you, man. That's the one that really stings. Yeah. You know, there's a Celtics friend of mine, and he goes to me, yeah, it took you like, a last second buzzer beater to stay in the series. And I'm like, dude, those things happen in basketball. How often has Marcus Smart hit five straight threes within a span of 4 minutes? Yeah. Never. Like, yeah. So, I mean, it's a, but game two hurts because there was no reason to put out that lineup at the start of the fourth at the time. This is not hindsight talking. Even at the time, it looked like a really, really dumb decision to come out with that lineup, and we paid the price. So the game seven doesn't really bug me too much. Like Norm's missed layup or block layup. It's game two that really stinks.
While we're on the subject of Nurse, what do you think about Nurse's performance coaching wise against Stevens? Because obviously Stevens, I really respect him. I think he's one of the best tacticians in the NBA. How do you think Nurse fared compared to one of the best?
Well, I'll say over a seven game series, you know, you will have probably exhausted all your strategies and shown pretty much every single card to the other coach. And it goes both ways, right?
Yeah.
And I found that, and I made a little video about this one too, and I highlighted some plays specifically with Jason Tatum as the ball handler, where by game six or seven, they knew exactly how to beat our zone.
Mm-hmm.
So overdoing the box and one in game seven and in game six, I thought did not work out for Nurse, because Tatum, basically what they did was they wanted the Van Vliet on Tatum matchup. Mm-hmm. Because Tatum is taller than Van Vliet. As soon as they have that, Tatum is also quicker than him. So at this point, you have a guy who's quicker than you. Tatum is quicker than Van Vliet. He's got the ball in his hands. He can shoot over him. He can drive. And most importantly, he can pass over him, right? He can pass very easily over a 6-1, whatever Fred is. Yeah. And that ability of Jason Tatum to pass over Fred Van Vliet, I thought was a killer. And that's what they use to kill any sort of zone, like triangle and two, box and one, whatever it is, a zone defense at the end of the day, right? And I thought Nurse did not have a response to that. At the same time, what are you going to do at that point? Because the Celtics have shown they can beat you man, they can beat you zone. And it's almost like we were running out of options. And going back to my earlier point, in a series decided by a possession, you know, what are you going to say about Nurse? I think he did okay. Besides the substitution, some of his subs were pretty questionable. I thought he should have played Matt Thomas more. Mm-hmm. That was a mistake, because every time
he had a good shift in game seven. I don't know why he didn't play the second half.
He didn't play beyond the first quarter, I think, right? In the first quarter he came in, and then in that first quarter, if you notice, the Celtics always have to stick a man on Matt Thomas. They respect his outside shooting. They know he's a specialist. They stick to him. And what that does is it takes away one guy who can cheat off.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you have one guy who's stuck to Matt Thomas, and there's one less guy trying to slap the ball from Kyle Lowry. There's one less guy trying to trap Fred VanVleet. So I thought, I'm surprised he didn't see that success from Thomas. Like the impact of Thomas in the game, not necessarily from a scoring perspective, but how it shaped the Celtics defense. I thought he should have extended that, and I'm surprised he never did, because he is a guy who likes to try different things. And that experiment worked, but he still didn't go back to it.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, one thing you saw in the series is, you know, he did try different things defensively and stuff like that, which I think at this point you kind of expect from Nurse now. That's his like signature move, right? But he does try different things with kind of the same guys. He does pretty much only trust the core seven. And honestly, at times, he didn't really trust Norm either. Maybe a little bit too much trust in Mark and a little bit too little trust in Serge. And then really, I mean, just the rest of the bench, he just didn't trust them at all, which, I mean, honestly, I can't blame him that much for it. I think the Celtics are just executing at a high level. You can't afford mistakes. You know, when Terrence Davis comes into the game and you give him a chance and he fouls like Jason Tatum three times in 3 minutes, you can't, it's just tough as a coach to be like, okay, I'll try him again another game, especially when these games are that close. So
You brought up Ibaka, which is a really good point, because if there is one player the Celtics were just unable to stop the entire seven games, who essentially got a score whenever he wanted in the paint, it was Ibaka, because he was simply much stronger than Tice. He was bigger than anybody they had. He was more fluid. He was more just robust in the paint. And
he shot the three really well.
Which is bonus. I'm not even talking about his three. I'm talking about his inside game here, which the Celtics did not have an answer to. And I thought Nurse could have sent a few possessions that way instead of going to guys like Siakam over and over again, even after they had shown that they were struggling. And I also felt the way he tried to get Siakam off the mark wasn't great. I think putting Siakam in one-on-one situations against great defenders is not a strategy to get him going, especially when his one-on-one game isn't really that coordinated and is fairly predictable at this point in his career. So I thought he messed up on those couple of fronts.
Yeah. But I mean, look, listen, obviously, you know, I think based on just the guys that did end up showing up, right? When you look at with Pascal, we'll talk about Pascal plenty. But you know, when your best guy struggles like that, to even have a position to have a chance to win that game seven, a pretty good chance to win that game seven, it's still a pretty good coaching job. So I think, you know, congrats to Nurse on the extension. Well-deserved. Curious to see what the terms are on that in terms of years and amount. I feel like, you know, Dwayne Casey got, a five-year, $35 million deal. Feel like if you're Nurse and you're his agent, you might come in and be like, look, you just replaced me with this guy. You better give me that at least, you know, but we'll see. Who knows? I mean, but I'm happy for Nurse.
I rarely count how much money a coach makes because it has no impact on the flexibility of the team, especially when you're as rich as MLSE is.
Yeah. Other news this week, Terrence Davis named all rookie second team. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you care about the all rookie second team?
Probably one.
Yeah. All right. Here's a fun fact. All right. He is the first Raptors rookie since Jonas Valanciunas in 2013 to end up on the all rookie team, which is interesting because Raptors have developed a fair number of guys recently. You know, OG, Pascal, Fred, even to go with DeLon Wright, Jakob Poeltl, these are solid guys, even going back earlier, you know.
Yeah.
But Terrence Davis. What do you think of Terrence?
I like him. I think he loses confidence a little bit too quickly sometimes, and
I mean, to be fair, Nurse loses confidence in him
even quicker
than he does, but
there you go. I think maybe some of that is shown on the court. I think he probably is, I think he's very good at attacking gaps in the defense. I think his first step is very good. Even against the Celtics in the brief stint he came on, he had a couple of good moves, didn't get enough playing time just because I don't know. I guess the reason he didn't play is because it was either him or like Van Vliet or like some other wing. I mean, so he was definitely lower in the pecking order there. But I mean, he's fine, man. I don't expect him to be a regular, like, you know, rotation player. I think he's a eighth guy, maybe I'll say, in the regular season and next year in the playoffs, if he develops his 3-point shooting even better and gets a little more consistency, he might make it higher than that. But, you know, what Terrence Davis, I don't care about Terrence Davis. Man.
Wow.
Congratulations on his all rookie
season. I mean, congrats to Terrence. You know, yeah. I thought he was great in certain moments and then he would disappear a lot. You know, and
which is to be expected. Yeah, he's a rookie. He's a rookie. I mean,
he's also kind of found money too for an undrafted guy to come in and be productive. Is not bad. I like his tools. You know, he's got good size. I think. What do you think the future position is for him based on his profile now? Because I think initially he was billed as more of a point guard, but I didn't see that much point guard ability. I saw more shooting guard ability.
Yeah, he's definitely. Well, I'll say
he's an off-ball player.
There's no playmaking ability there right now. I think it also depends on what the franchise kind of wants to do with him, right? Because the Raptors are pretty good at kind of finding guys and then putting them where they need them, not necessarily where they might naturally, quote unquote, fit. So if they see him as a kind of like a Fred replacement, like if Fred does tend to leave, then obviously he plays more in the off guard position. What he hasn't necessarily shown any playmaking ability yet. But then again, he's a rookie, and I don't know. I don't remember. I think a rookie year is more about the team understanding exactly what you have. I'd be really surprised for the Raptors to at this point think we see him as a X. They're probably still kind of evaluating his game and see what attributes he possesses, so that they're able to make a judgment on where he fits. I think it's a bit too early for him.
Yeah, that's fair. I think you don't want to limit him too early. One thing I did like about Terrence is he made 72 appearances, which it's like a weird thing to talk about, but the fact that a rookie was able to stay healthy and just, you know, stay in shape for a whole season, I think that's a struggle for a lot of rookies. Obviously a very weird circumstance this year with COVID shutting down the season. And, you know, with Terrence, I feel like if you were really to peg him going forward as someone who could maybe replace someone existing in the roster, I think the most obvious guy you might replace him with was with Norm. Cause I think like his skill set with Norms are more similar than him and Fred right now, at least to me.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
And he's got to play a little bit better on defense. He's just, I mean, a lot better on defense, to be honest, but I mean, he's a rookie. He's got to figure that part out, you know? But congrats to Terrence. I'm happy the voters recognize them. Feels like a little bit of a weaker rookie class. What do you think? Didn't really seem
For sure. There's not much there, but I think he'd be happy about the second team. I think he was really disappointed on not making the All-Star game, whatever they have.
Right.
I think he was genuinely pissed off about that. And I think he had a right to be, because at the time he was playing really well. And for some reason, I think he just got snubbed. It's just one of those things of like coaches or whoever votes for that stuff, just not seeing him enough. Because at that time, he for sure deserved that that place on All-Star weekend.
Yeah, well, this is similar to the you know, the Hall of Fame voting sometimes, where, you know, if for example, if Kyle Lowry was Croatian, I was talking to someone about this yesterday, Kyle Lowry was Croatian, there's no doubt he's a Hall of Famer.
Kyle Lowry's a Hall of Famer, man.
He's already a Hall of Famer already. Yeah. But, you know, if you know, there would be absolutely zero doubt if he was Croatian or just basically not American. And it's kind of the same deal with the rookie game, because it's instead of rookies and sophomores, it's just world versus USA.
What's up with you and Croatians?
No, nothing against Croatians, man. Lovely country. You know, I don't want any beef with any Balkan country ever. So I've learned that lesson already. But that's my point. He's American. It's a little harder to get into that game. And then the last news item happened earlier today on Wednesday afternoon. Pascal Siakam made the All-NBA team, and not just the All-NBA team, the second team, which is a little bit surprising. I thought he'd make the All-NBA team. I thought he deserved to. I would have personally had him third team. But he makes the second team. To be honest, very close between him, Butler, and Tatum. We're just talking about a matter of like three or four votes separating the three of them. So very easily, Pascal could have made the third team instead. But second team All-NBA for Pascal, this means the Raptors now have to pay him slightly more. There's a clause in his contract that sees him getting paid an additional 2% above what he was originally going to get in his max contract. It's, you know, fairly marginal, although it is still a lot of money in the long run. First off, congrats to Pascal. I think, you know, up until where this vote was decided, which this vote was for all the games that happened before the shutdown. So none of the eight seeding games, none of the playoffs. And up until that point, Pascal was playing like an All-NBA player. So I'm happy for Pascal. Yeah. Well, maybe we can use this as a jumping off point to talk about Pascal and sort of what he's done. Because obviously the guy that showed up after the COVID shutdown was not an All-NBA player. But, you know, yeah. What do you think about this?
I mean, I don't know the logistical reasons why he wasn't able to pick up a basketball in 4 months. Something about a visa and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I just thought that if you're, you know, a wealthy NBA player playing for a wealthy NBA franchise, you're going to find a gym and get some shots up. I don't know. Maybe I'm being simplistic about that. So I never understood that. And maybe you can tell me why that wasn't the case, because I haven't done my research on this
one. I mean, I don't really know either. I've tried to look into it. I mean, you know, he lives in a condo. And I think maybe COVID restrictions were stricter here in Canada. Like, for example, even Matt Thomas, when he was in Toronto for the start of like the first 2 months of COVID, he didn't shoot at all. And it was weird for him. And then he ended up driving to Wisconsin where his family lives. And when he got there, he started training.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the situation. And it's not like, you know, like for example, you know, Kyle has a house, you know, in Philly and, you know, there's like two courts in his backyard and stuff like that. You know, it's not like that. He lives in a condo. And it's weird to me because he is a pretty hardworking guy. The one thing you can't really knock Pascal for is his work ethic. This guy is really hardworking. So you would have thought that it's not like he would have just said, oh, wow. All right. No basketball. Fine. I'm not shooting the basketball. This is not like Shaq saying I'm going to recover on work time. Got hurt on work time. I'm going to recover on work time. You know,
no, I was more going with this.
I don't understand, to be honest, why he didn't.
Well, I was more going with this on the like, what did the franchise do to get him ready? Right. I mean, maybe could they have done something different so that you don't enter the critical part of the season with your best player cold, or maybe they didn't think it was going to be a big deal. What do I think? I mean, I think it's really difficult. So it's very fair to compare him to previous Raptors who suffered in the playoffs. So people who are upset about him underperforming, they're probably upset because they've seen this in the past.
Yeah.
Right? And so I totally get that perspective. And honestly, even like I did the quick reaction for game seven. And like in that, like he's the first one that comes up in the tool. Siakam. Like my first reaction was like another garbage game, like pure trash. Right.
It's not good.
And it was not a good game. But in that game, you're evaluating his on-court performance there. You're not evaluating the human being, Pascal Siakam. You're evaluating how he played in that game. And he struggled. And that recap probably was true for all the games there. A lot has to do with him not playing basketball for 4 months. I think that has a lot to do with it, to be honest with you. I can't imagine. But he still had some time to recover. So maybe I'm wrong there. But he also went up against all NBA-type defenders. Who were not conceding anything. And they did not give him an inch on his drives. Not an inch. I don't think he ever got into a position where he blew by his man. Like he was never able to just get past his man, whether it be off the dribble or on a spin move, was never able to do that. And I think I look at this as, I hope what he gets out of it is that, man, I got a long ways to go before I can even repeat what I did last year. Because if there's one thing we know, and we have seen this time and time again with Bosch, DeRozan, Vince, every player, the NBA will catch up to your strengths and you will have to diversify. And his spin move is priced into the market. And what I mean by that is you can have an advantage for a short, it's like an economics thing. I think you took economics. Weren't you an economics guy? Yeah,
I was. Yeah.
It's like if a firm has an advantage, it will live in the short run until the market stabilizes and supply meets demand and price equalizes, right? So the price on his offensive game really is now the correct price. Like it's people know what to expect and they know how to react to what he does things. Now it's up to him to take his game to the next level. So the question really isn't, do I believe in Pascal Siakam? The question is, do I believe in Pascal Siakam's ability or desire to dedicate himself to improve?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah.
And I believe it more than I did for DeRozan or even Chris Bosh and definitely for Vince Carter. Right. So I think if you compare his desire to improve relative to his peers, his Raptors peers, I'd say it's higher. And that's the reason that I have more faith in him than I've had with everybody else. And this has been a shock to his system as well, because like, look at his NBA journey. He comes in, you know, amazing as a rookie, like gets Kawhi, dominates offensively, doesn't see a double team ever. Right. And everything's going good, 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 good. And suddenly this happens to you. Like it is a shock to your system.
Of course,
like you're like,
absolutely.
What the hell happened? Like I thought I was amazing and now this happened to me. So, and I think he has that ability to reflect on and reflect deeply and go, what do I need to do better? And I think he will do that. So I know I've been a little harsh on some of the quick reaction, but you know, but that's just all right.
It is also just a reflection of sort of how it played, like viscerally, emotionally watching some of this stuff. It was a little jarring. It was a little shocking to see him come up short in some of these opportunities, because the Celtics kind of moved away from start of the series. I thought they double teamed, showed extra bodies, you know, help on the rim. It's pretty standard stuff. And by the end, it was single coverage. And that really just shows you what he was doing, because there was no need to commit a second defender. Yeah. There was no need to cheat off Fred to maybe swipe into the post and maybe he kicks it out to Fred for a three. None of that, all that stuff went away. The thing with, you know, Pascal, that, you know, you brought up the sort of DeMar comparisons, you know, the Bosch comparisons. You know, obviously DeMar was also a really hardworking guy, famously, but I felt like DeMar sort of had a bit of a stubbornness and sort of bad habits sort of developed earlier on. He had a very clear idea of what he wanted to do, what kind of role he wanted, and then he got better within that role. He got better at mid-range shooting. He got better at handling the ball so he can get to more mid-range shots. He got better at getting to the basket. But he was also kind of inflexible in the sense that he only wanted to do that idea. He was hardworking, but he worked hard towards that one goal. Whereas with Pascal, he's, because he did start basketball later on, it does still feel like he's, A, just open to different opportunities as a player. We've seen him, the way he played this year, very different from the way he played last year, and which was very different from the way he played the year before that. And then B, I don't really see bad habits in Pascal that he's unwilling to give up. I do see bad habits in the sense that sometimes he forces drives that aren't there. You know, he'll leave the ball exposed and he'll get a strip, stuff like that. There are bad habits to clean up by for sure, but I don't see tunnel vision. I don't see an unwillingness to play defense. I don't see a rigidity in terms of how he wants to play and only want to play one style. And yeah, I just think that right now his skill set is not refined enough, right? I mean, all the stuff that he struggled with was skill stuff, like dribbling at the defense, shooting the ball. These are, you know, things that are to do with skill set. And whether that's because he didn't play for a long time or anything like that, or because he's early in his development or whatever, but I think it's just, he needs to refine the handle. He needs to refine the jumper. And yeah, and I think also just get more reps as a number one guy. Because I felt like as the year went on this year, he sort of played more of a number. He started as a number one option and then regressed back to a number two option as the year went on. And I would like to see him, even if he fails a little bit, get more reps in the regular season, you know, develop as a ball handler, develop as a pick and roll operator. Because, you know, that's the only way to move forward, is you got to face a challenge head on. So
yeah, DeMar needed a Tiger Woods type change. Like Tiger Woods famously, when he was even at the top of his game, but he realized some slippage, he completely reinvented his swing. Like in the middle of his career, while being a very good golfer, he went and he said, you know what, if I want to reach greatness, I need to change some of these fundamental things about my swing. Mm-hmm. And he did it. And he struggled for like a year, year and a half, but he came back and he won like a bunch of majors. But that required him to do, he had to almost take.
There's a humility in that.
Yeah. There's like a, he took like three steps back to go six steps forward. Mm-hmm. Or I could have used one step back to go two steps forward because the ratio is the same, but you know what I'm saying.
Right? Yeah. All
right. And I think DeMar, because as you said, like he had some structural elements in his game, which he needed to change. Like he needed to change the way he shoots, like the way he goes up for his shot needed to be changed. Right. So I don't think he was willing to do that, whether it's stubbornness or whether he realized, man, the effort here is just too great or whatever the hell it was. He never did it. With Pascal, I think he's more of a sponge than DeRozan was. And I think you can coach him into doing things that, because he doesn't know any better. Because he as you said, he's a like he doesn't have a long history of basketball and how he played. So maybe that. And one thing about Pascal is that he struggled. The only concern I had, and this is just something I observed, is that you miss your layups, you leave your shots short, you turn the ball over because your handle's a little shit. That's fine. Except that there were like at least three or four instances where he took a jumper very selfishly. There's a couple of instances in game six. There's a couple in game seven. The one that sticks to my mind is like the Raptors have had a brutal possession. OG gets the rebound and he passes it to Siakam on the left elbow, a little left wing, let's say. And he immediately launches a long two. Right. And I'm like, and my immediate reaction at the time was, man, like I can forgive like you not being in rhythm and whatever, all that, but I cannot forgive that kind of decision making. And maybe that's just immaturity or whatever it is, but that's an aspect of his game that I would never want to see again. It is take long twos and bail an already advantageous defense out even more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between being aggressive with your shot and then taking the exact shot the defense wants you to take. And the Celtics were, for the most part, willing to give him that. And I get it from his perspective, too, because I think he shot 4 of 32 from three-point range. So, wow. Honestly, forget the extra point. Just step inside, shoot the mid-range jumper. But, like, you know, I do agree his decision-making there has to be better. And we even saw that throughout the course of the year. Even when he was hot early in the season, he would still take shots that are still a little bit outside of the rhythm of what the offense could be getting in that possession. And I think that comes with experience of just knowing what you can get in a possession. You know, I look at Jimmy Butler, for example, as a guy who is very skilled, but also not necessarily a great shooter. But when he does pick the times to shoot, I don't really think it's a bad shot. I think it's an aggressive shot. And for Pascal, I think it's just finding that balance.
And I can forgive that shot in the regular season because, frankly, that's what the regular season's for.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's there to prepare for the playoffs. By the way, I hope they shorten the regular season in general going forward because it's just too long of a practice session. So I can forgive it in the regular season. It's just that in those instances, I was just like, oh, man, that really hurts. And again, in a series decided by a possession, man, like, those things count.
Yeah. But congrats, Pascal, on the All-NBA team.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, we ripped you apart, man.
Are we ripping him?
No, not at all. And that's the thing. Pascal wouldn't even think of it as ripping because he's a guy who's very receptive to these things. You know what I mean? Maybe not from us, because who the fuck are we? But, like, you know, like, I'm sure when the coaches go over this stuff with him, you know, he's a guy who's willing to be coached. And I think he will take this opportunity to improve.
Yeah, and all these people, like, coming to, like, Pascal's, quote, defense. Like, buddy, he doesn't need your defense. Like, you don't need to be all outraged and offended and all these things that people are criticizing Pascal Siakam's game. Like, he's fine, man.
Well, people got mad at Sirit Sohi, friend of the podcast, Yahoo Sports reporter, for asking Pascal a follow-up question where Pascal had said earlier in the interview, you know, I feel responsible that I let my team down. And then Sirit asked, how does it feel to let your team down? And people were getting on her for it, which,
no, you know, that's a great question.
You could phrase the question differently, which to a little be more, a little softer and more approachable. But within the conversation, that's totally reasonable to ask.
Have you ever seen like older interviews with baseball managers and hockey coaches or even NBA guys? Like it's a direct line of questioning, right? And I think there's something entertaining, truthful, and honest about, you know, interviewing a coach or a player in a perfectly blunt way after the game. I don't think it's a slight on anybody. If you're following the news, like, you know, Bob Woodward had the whole book come out about Trump and all that. And you know, he's doing a lot of interviews and Republicans are doing a lot of interviews. And a lot of the questioning is very blunt.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about the fact that they evade the question and all that. But I find that the questioning around, I'm just giving an American politics example, is very blunt. It's like, hey, you did X. Like, you don't skirt around the issue. You go directly to the point. And I think it makes for good debate and back and forth. Also makes for good TV. And frankly, these professionals, they're well-tuned enough to know how to respond, and they don't need your outrage on a social media platform. Like, it's you're wasting your breath.
Mm. Yeah.
You're wasting your typing, whatever.
Yeah, well, people love the engagement. Okay, so OG Anunoby, let's move on. OG, so OG, I would say on the whole, he was more of a positive development from the Celtics series. You know, didn't necessarily significantly outperform his role, but did his role really well, which in a series where the Celtics are really tough defensively, a lot of guys struggled in their role. So for OG to be good in his role and fulfill it is a positive development. You just made a video about OG Anunoby's development, which I'll link to in the information section of this podcast. You know, what did you see from OG's series against the Celtics? It feels like there's things that he did well, but also things that he can clearly improve, especially on the offensive end.
Yeah, I saw a lot of OG because his play intrigued me a lot. Because if you know, and you should check the video. By the way, man, it's a 15-minute video. So,
bro, listen.
I know people don't like in-depth analysis and they want a quick hit of dopamine and move on. But trust me, invest the 15 minutes and you'll get to know OG a lot better than you currently do. So I'd say you said it perfectly. Like, if his role is 3-and-D, he did that to a T.
Yeah.
I don't think you can like, if you had to grade him, that's an A plus. It really is. So I think you said it perfectly, that of all the players that were supposed to do their role, he did his role the best. That's a really succinct way of summarizing his playoffs. What the question really is, what is our expectation of OG in the long term? If our expectation of OG is a 3-and-D guy, then man, job done. He'll continue to get better at that, and there's nothing to worry about. Sign him to a freaking 15-year contract as a 3-and-D player, whatever. If you expect him to go and become like an all-star type player, an all-star caliber player, he certainly has a lot of work to do. He has a good mid-range jumper, but he doesn't use it enough. He doesn't know how to set that jumper up enough. So whenever he gets into positions of trouble or the defense crowds him, he doesn't know how to create enough space so he can use that jumper that he already knows. So I think something similar to like a step back or a pull-up jumper is something that he definitely needs. Much like Siakam, his spin move is also very predictable. It's not as predictable as Siakam's.
Well, no one expects it right now because he's only spun like 8 times in his career, but people are going to pick up on that eventually if he keeps
very quickly. Yeah. Very, and just like they did with Siakam, by next mid-season next year, if not our start of the season, people will pick up on the fact that when he drives, he will spin just one way. So he needs to do that, and that's where he needs to diversify. And for some weird reason, his finishing is kind of poor.
His awareness is a little bad. Like you point out in the video, he'll sometimes take 3 dribbles when you only had room for 1. And then all of a sudden you're crowded by 2 guys. He goes up a lot in traffic, which is fine because he is strong and he's athletic. But a lot of that is if you have better awareness to be able to read the situation better, you can finish better. It's not like Kyle Lowry is a better finisher than Pascal, but he has way better awareness around the rim than Pascal does.
It's almost like, you know, sometimes when like somebody's like staring at you from the back, you can feel it. Even though there's no physical contact, you can still like, for whatever energy is there, you can feel it.
Yeah.
The great players always have that. Like they know where the defense is and they know how much room they have to operate. Because as you said, everybody knows how to finish. Everybody knows how to make a layup. Right. It's a question of given enough space, you'll make the layup. The question often becomes, do you know how much space you have? And I find OG doesn't know that. So he makes moves that take him towards the defense rather than away from it. Or sometimes he over fakes or he over dribbles. So he's definitely got to clean that up. And the question that I ask myself is that instinct or is that something that just comes with experience? And it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
So that's something he's got to clean up. He's also not a great passer. He's a very weak passer. Certainly he can't, like even when I looked at his Boston series, and again, that's against a very good defense. There were instances where he drove and in the middle of the drive realized that, oh my God, I don't have a path to the rim. Maybe I should pass. And his pickouts were very poor. Like he didn't know how much weight to put on the ball. He didn't know who to look for. But then again, that goes back to
that. That's more experience, I think.
If you've
never run a pick and roll in your life, and all of a sudden a third defender rotates to you in the middle of the floor, and you got to make that read, you got to know where your guys are and have experience. And that's something I know he's working on, because if you watch like practice and stuff like that, like he will. There are drills that they end up doing, pick and roll drills and stuff like that, are specifically designed to make the read to wherever the cross court pass is. And that I think is there. But I also do agree with you though. Like it's not like OG's making that much play happen for other people. Like I think his best pass is probably dropping inside in a little shovel pass to whoever's in the dunker spot, like Serge or Pascal or Mark or whoever. Aside from that though, he's not really going to be a big playmaker, which I don't know. He's not really unwilling to pass either. It's just,
well, his role isn't to create right now.
That's true. He never has the ball even. That's the thing.
Exactly. So part of the thing is for next year might be how much do you want to, give creation responsibility to OG, or how much do you tell him, hey, OG, part of just instead of just shooting it every time or just looking for the swing pass, maybe drive and look for this guy. Like how many plays do you have structured into your offense where it's a passing play for OG And I'm not, obviously it's not going to be a large share of it, but how much of that is factored into Nick Nurse's offense next year? Because that will speak to how much improvement he makes next year. Because right now, I think whatever assignment, like if you treat him as a student, whatever assignment we have given him, he's gotten A pluses on.
Yeah.
It's his stretch assignments that he's falling a little short on. But I think I just love his demeanor, man.
Me
I think
too.
He's a really serious guy. And I think you need that to be a great player.
And I think, you know, yes, he's already pretty great in his role in terms of what he currently is doing, but you got to give him a little bit more just development wise, not even necessarily to improve your team, but you need to know what you have with him, right? Because you have a potential contract extension coming up. We'll see if OG signs it or not, or what the Raptors approach that with. There's a whole cap strategy of whether you want to sign the guy early or wait and then keep their salary number low, whatever, right? Who knows? But, you know, but before you do sign up to any sort of contract, though, you should have a better sense of what he can do and where he can develop. And I actually do think after this season, you know, there should be more of a role for OG offensively. Maybe if he really struggles at it, you pull back. But, you know, I'd like to see something. You know, I'd like to see him running one or two pick and rolls a game just to get the reps, just to get a feel, put the ball on the floor a little bit more, because he can do it. And when he does catch people with the spin move, it looks great. Mm. It's rare when OG looks graceful on offense, but when he does look graceful, he does look pretty great because he is 6'8". He is strong as hell.
Yeah.
And his jumper is really – I trust the jumper now. That's the thing. The biggest thing coming in as a rookie was, A, he needs to be healthy off the ACL, but B, he needs to hit the jumper consistently. And he's I trust him. What'd you say? Yeah. He was like 41% on catch and shoot threes now? Like,
yeah.
Damn good rate, you know?
On threes in general. So he's I'm not worried about OG in the slightest, man. I think he will improve next year as well. And there's nothing to worry about there. Like if you talked about his contract, I mean, I would, even if you have to pay 10% more to get him to an extra deal, so to an extra couple of years, I would do it because I think his next contract will be one of those contracts where you're like, man, I wish we should have offered him more because he looks like a steal at this point. Kind of like what we do with Norm and Fred. Mm-hmm. I think he's in that realm of player where you may want to gamble on that side with him.
Yeah, the Raptors have been pretty damn good at signing the rookie extension players. The only miss they've ever had is in recent years is the Bargnani deal, which some people I remember arguing was a steal for Brian Colangelo, but it was not. It was
well,
got us Kawhi inadvertently. You so, you know,
there you go.
Something good came out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, two more questions on the roster before we go. First, what do you do at the center position? So there's a report out there. Mark might go back to Spain. He's 35 years old, looked pretty washed up offensively in that series, if not entirely washed up. He had to shave his entire head to hit 1-3, which is never a good sign. And then Serge Ibaka is kind of unclear. He was asked about it in the post game, obviously didn't give an answer, but you know, he's had a nice year. I could see other teams, maybe like the Nets or the Rockets, you know, with his OKC connections, you know, with KD or with James Harden, maybe that's the destination for those teams to consider. But what are you doing if you're Masai Ujiri at the center position?
Well, certainly Gasol can't be brought back in a starting capacity. I think if he has any value, it's more as a vet on the bench and maybe a backup center of sorts. I think he definitely has value there because he is physically fit, right? It's not like he's 35, but it's not like he's...
Well, that's the thing that bothers me. Oh, that's the thing that not bothers me. Well, that's the thing that worries me.
Because
he did shape down. And it's like you might say to yourself, okay, you know what? He was overweight. Maybe he comes in, you know, he's slim. He might have a greater year. Like that illusion has been shattered. He just did that and it did not impact anything.
So I don't know much about what happens in the locker room. So I don't know what his veteran presence is in the locker and how much impact he has on the younger guys. Maybe somebody can comment on that. But I think situationally, he's a good guy to have on the bench. Like if it's between him and like, name some center or whatever, I would take Gasol if he's willing to come back in a reduced capacity and at the right money. I don't think it's a hard no to Gasol by any means. It's only a hard no from a starting capacity. If he's starting center next year, you know, I'm worried.
Yeah.
With regards to Ibaka, man, I like Ibaka.
Yeah.
I would bring Ibaka back because the guy is, I think he gets along with his teammates really well. I think he's vocal. He on the court, he's amazing. We saw his 3-point shooting. He's always fit. You know, his inside game is pretty strong. I don't know what more you would want from a guy coming off the bench. And also, he never complains. Mm-hmm. He never complains about starting, bench, all that stuff. But I think much like, you know, as you said, I think he's going to base his decision on where can I get a title next, mm-hmm. right? And if Toronto is not the destination, then he might go somewhere else.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. And it's also a question of money, too, because I don't think I want to overpay Mark or Serge. I think if the price is too high, you just have to walk away from these guys. But if it's reasonable, I know some people are worried because, you know, everything's about Giannis in 2021, this pipe dream. But I want to keep the asset if it's possible. If the contract is so lucrative that it's no longer an asset, then you let him walk. It is what it is, right? But if Serge wants to come back on a cheaper deal, like, you know, I don't know, man. $15-16 million a year, because like that sounds low, but that's what centers are getting. Like JV got $16 million as an extension, and maybe you could say JV is not as good as Serge, or JV is better than Serge. They're pretty comparable players, effective wise. They're different players, and JV's younger, and you know the market for centers is just low. So if it's something reasonable for Serge, 3-year deal, I do it. And if it's something really short term for Mark, I'd do that too. But I don't know.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, then what do you do with the position? So you, because I thought Nurse had this idea last year of like, oh, we're going to start whoever based on matchups. And then midway through the year, it was just Mark's going to start regardless. And, you know, if you look at the Celtics series, that was a matchup thing, right? Like Serge should have started some of those games or at least played maybe like 48 minutes. Maybe he plays 30 minutes and Mark plays 18, you know, and that didn't really end up happening. So. I don't know.
This is one of those trust Masai things. Like who's on the market? I'm checking out the free agents here. I mean, there's not a whole lot to go through. But I don't know, man. What do you want me to do? Just guess on who the rapper should like?
I just want your thoughts on the players, man.
Do we bring back Serge? I'd say absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You try to bring him back. And also he works well with our guards, right? So there's a lot to be said for that. Like with a new guy, it's a whole new thing to get familiar. And the fact that he's comfortable coming off the bench and you can slot him in anywhere you want, really, that's a pretty big advantage.
There you go. And then the last question and the other key free agency decision is what you do with Fred VanVleet. So Fred, there is a tepid rumor. This is from Legion Hoops. Legion Hoops. Yeah, that's right. It's not from Shams or Woj or Mark Stein or Chris Haynes, any of these guys. Mm-hmm. It's from Legion Hoops. But Legion Hoops is saying, you know, the Knicks are ready to offer around $22 million a year for Fred. Based on what you've seen out of Fred this year, is that something you're comfortable with, 22?
$22 million for a guy? No, I'm not comfortable with that at all.
No? Okay.
Well, I don't know what the relative number is compared to other guards, but I think.
Give me some context. The range. All right. So you got Ricky Rubio, 17. You got Terry Rozier, 20. You got Malcolm Brogdon, 22. And I guess if you keep going further, like a Drew Holiday is signed an older deal, but he's on 25. I think I prefer to have Giroux on 25 than Fred at 22, but that's also an older deal. You're not going to get that nowadays. Does that make you feel a little bit more comfortable with Fred 22?
That did not add any sort of comfort to me.
No, you'd rather get 17 for Ricky Rubio. What do you
say? No, I didn't say I like Ricky Rubio. I said you also threw in Brogdon in there, who I like as a player.
Okay, right. So you want Brogdon more? Okay. All right.
I don't know. Do you? What do you think?
I think Brogdon's a better scorer for sure because he's like just straight up stronger and he's bigger and stuff like that. Uh-huh. But he's also really injury prone. He doesn't play like a full year. I mean, I guess Fred is also succumbing to injuries a little bit too, but not in the same way. I would say they're a little bit more comfortable. I think Fred is better defensively and Fred's a little bit better off ball as well. Like he's gotten pretty good at finding opportunities to find open off ball.
Oh man, I disagree there, man.
You don't like that, no?
I think his finding people game is still pretty suspect. No.
Him finding people, definitely suspect, because he will find his own self more often than not. But I mean like him off the ball and finding space to get open and stuff like that. His catch and shoot game is a little bit better.
Catch and shoot. Sure. I mean, if you go deep enough on the court, you'll always be open.
Well, he's done that, all right? He said, look, I'm 5'10". I need to shoot from 35 feet.
And, I mean, yeah, good. You know, uncontested look from 35 feet. You're going to get that anytime. And he, that's what he did against the Celtics. It was bombs away, man.
Yo, it was deep against like those pick and pops where Jaylen Brown is closing on him. This guy was shooting from the logo.
You can tell when the range is out of the comfort zone of a player when they start leaning with one leg. Mm. That's when you know, like, you have to put extra on your on the shot because your natural shooting motion doesn't give you that range. So you almost got to like jump off one leg to get that. And there's very rare people who can hit that consistently, right? So if he's trying to do a Steph Curry move and that's going to be his primary way of like getting off the ball offense, then I'm not a big fan. And also, man, I mean, I don't know how much you consider this, but Boston's not going anywhere.
Yeah, right. That's true.
I mean, they're staying exactly where they are. They got the young guys. They're there for the next 3-5 years, whatever that window is. And you're going to have to go through them if you want to come back to the finals. And you got to ask yourself, do you want to enter a situation where you have Jason Tatum guarding Fred VanVleet, you know, throughout the series again? I don't know, man.
Well,
it just depends how you, because oftentimes, man, I don't know if the NBA is there yet, but at this point, you got to look at who are the teams in the East, which we know we have to beat in the playoffs, and then almost design your team to beat, you know, these particular teams.
Here's the thing. This is one of the mistakes that the Sixers made, because the Sixers looked at last offseason and were like, look, all we got to do is beat the Bucks. And they didn't get into the Bucks bracket, and B, their team sucked. They just were poorly designed. And C, the Bucks weren't even the team to beat in the East. Now, I'm not saying Masai is even anywhere close to the level of GM that Elton Brand is, okay? Obviously, he's much better, but you know, I think you do come run into errors. But I do agree with you, though. What the team like the Celtics, that's a team that you can anticipate will be there going forward because they are young, because they are pretty established. Their coach is going to be there. Their GM is going to be there. They have stars for the future that they're going to keep. I think in that matchup, I think I still feel comfortable with Fred guarding Kemba. But, you know, at the same time, I do hear you with the size concerns. The thing with Fred is just, so how much are you willing to, what's your walkaway number for Fred?
Well, hang on. It's not, can Fred guard Kemba? It's a question of, will Fred get killed by whoever's guarding him? Which I thought he did in this series. Tatum being the main guy who I thought exploited him pretty much at will. And you can't always expect Kemba, Kemba got some pretty clean, Kemba can always get a clean look with
the Yeah, he can. Jumper, right? The step back is disgusting.
Not even fair there.
I can't believe that we didn't redraft Kemba, man.
So go, buddy, that was the year where Steve,
we had freaking Jose Calderon, man. Why did you not draft Kemba? I don't understand.
Steve Gennaro, who used PhD Steve, who used to do our draft coverage for Rappers Republic year after year. This is back when the draft was the thing to look forward to because the team sucked so bad.
The only thing to look forward to, baby.
Buddy, we used to prepare for the draft starting in January. Like the mock draft 1.0 used to come out in January.
You guys used to start scouting before Mauricio Gherardini started.
Gherardini, there you go. There you go. So I remember that year, him and I were having a pretty big debate on Kemba Walker versus Jonas Valanciunas. And I was very, very firmly on the Kemba side at the time. And JB turned out to be a fine pick and got totally. Us whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I was always a big Kemba fan. And by the way, Will, do you think the mid-range game is returning to the NBA?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's good to see.
I think it's more balanced now because I think there was an inefficiency, as you mentioned, with the three-pointer has now been priced in. People are defending the three-point line really, really well, and they're defending it strategically, and there are not as many inefficiencies to exploit. So your options are, like the Houston Rockets, I'll shoot, instead of exploiting an inefficiency, I'll create another inefficiency by shooting 60, which is just stupid, right? And it creates a basketball that I don't even want to watch. And the other option is, okay, now that people are selling out to the three-point line as much, how much can they guard the mid-range? And I think, A, a lot of teams aren't even equipped to guard the mid-range anymore. And B, you know, especially when playoff defenses get really tough. I mean, the three-point shot is something that you still absolutely need to have, the space to floor. You can't just put five Tony Allens out there and expect to win. But you also do need someone who can get you a shot. You know, I thought we saw that last year with Kawhi. We saw the last series with Tatum. Even with Kemba. Kemba, at the end of a game, was freaking lethal because he would just come from the right corner, come off a screen. You're chasing him. He crosses you up, and you're frozen for a second, and he gets, like, you know, a meter of space to shoot his little mid-range jumper, and it was money every time. And when you need a basket, those things really kill you. So,
man, yeah. Even announcers now, like sometimes a guy fakes out, you know, he fakes a three and steps in for a jumper. Mm-hmm. And the announcers are like, well, you see what he did there? Like, he took a mid-range jumper. A mid-range jumper is something you take when, you know, somebody's running at you and you just take a little dribble and you get that mid-range jumper. And I'm like, that's exactly what a mid-range jumper is.
I mean, look, you're not like, okay, I'm going to – no more Aaron Aflalo types, you know? Like, DeMar is the last Aaron Aflalo type where you just give it to him in the mid-post. He jab steps and then he, like, shoots the mellow jumper or whatever. You're not doing that as much, but
who's going to make more money this summer, DeMar or Fred?
Ah, that's a great question. I actually think DeMar might take the player option. To be honest, it's still quite a bit of money to be there. But
how much is it? Is it like 30? Is that what we gave him?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me look that up. But that's a really good question. I think DeMar ultimately makes a little bit more, but it's too close for the fact that DeMar is still a better player than Fred. DeMar has a $28 million player option.
Yeah, he's going to pick that up, man. Unless he gets a really long-term deal, but I don't even see who can offer him that long of a deal.
But I mean, the thing with DeMar is, look, DeMar had a really efficient year, and still a lot of teams are going to be looking at the situation being like, I can win with a Fred kind of player because Fred can do this, this, and this for my team. He can shoot threes. He can, you know, play off the ball. He can defend, you know, whereas with DeMar, if you sign DeMar, you have to play DeMar ball, and DeMar ball doesn't win that much. And that's probably why.
Would
you rather have Westbrook or Fred in a playoff series?
Westbrook or Fred? Oh my God.
I'd rather have Fred. Man. I'm serious. I don't want to see my team doing the Russell Westbrook. Like, Rajon Rondo's brother looked at me differently. And now I have to shoot five mid-range jumpers and scream, you got to double team me when I'm down 30 points. I don't want to see that stuff. I'd rather see Fred. I don't care if he's missing layups, man. Westbrook will miss layups too.
The other day I was on this Who's Take show that we do. And there was like a joke question is like, Russell Westbrook is a finish the tweet. And the first thing that popped into my head was like, not a starting NBA point guard.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be like funny or whatever, but there's an element of truth to that, man. The way he runs a team is just destructive to the entire team. Mm-hmm. And I don't have many NBA jerseys, but I do have a Russell Westbrook jersey because I loved him that much. Mm-hmm. When I see him play now, it's like, man, like you're actively hurting the team with your decision making.
Yeah.
By the way, for DeRozan, how many shooting guards do you know that shoot less than 26% and make $30 million from three?
Yeah. I mean, Butler shot it really badly this year, but Butler can still shoot. We're seeing it in the playoffs here. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know, man. I thought Dwayne Wade was going to be the last one. And he probably was after DeMar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, though. But DeMar is very useful. Like, if someone could have DeMar DeRozan as a sixth man, offensively, because he can really – he's very sophisticated. He's very savvy with his moves, you know.
You think he'll accept a sixth man role somewhere?
I mean, sometimes life makes decisions for you, you know. That could be one of those situations. Unless he wants to keep playing, like, you know, with the Spurs and miss the playoffs.
He's going to pull an AI. I'm a starter.
Yeah, where did he do that? Where is, like, Detroit or Memphis?
Detroit, yeah.
Yeah, that was Memphis, real sad seeing him in Memphis, man. Yeah. That did not make any sense.
I think his fund kicks in any time now, right? The Reebok fund?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The one where...
$30 million or whatever, where he, which gets him out of his brokenness?
I just hope he gets into a healthier space in general, you know? Because you never want to see a legend like that, you know? Like, I want to see all my legends like Bill Russell, you know, just every year at the finals, they wheel him out, hands out the trophy. He's on Twitter. You know, he looks pretty good for – if I look like that when I'm 98 years old, you know, whatever he is, you know, like, that'd be great. So,
Yeah, I think 30 years from now, man, you'll be attending the sports conferences. They're going to wheel you out like Bill Russell.
Man.
Yeah, man. Here's William Liu, legend.
Oh, shit. Wow. All right. Yeah, it's all right, man. Always love doing this. Always love chatting with you, man. You've been doing a lot of great work, seriously. I'd like to plug it. But I also want you to talk about it, you know. But I've really enjoyed your interview series. I always love that you're back on the podcasting airwaves. You know, for people who don't know, like longtime listeners, like Zarar gave me my start in podcasting because you had to do an MBA 1 year. And I was like, that's fine. I'll take over the podcast. And it launched a career. But you've been doing this interview series. I listened to one, you interviewed Dave Hopla.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite good. So there's a lot of Raptor history there. He's also had an interesting career. And you're also making these videos now, in addition to the columns and stuff that people already know you for. These YouTube breakdown videos on Raptors Republic. Tell people about the interview and then also the video.
Well, the interview series is a little bit different because it's not so much about what just happened that week. It's more about getting to know some people a little bit more deeply and get some people who really have experience and expertise on a subject matter and to comment on it. Sometimes we interview people who are maybe popular but necessarily don't have the background, whatever, experience or education to comment on certain things, and then we give them a pretty big voice. So I thought, are there people who are willing to come on and talk about things that they are an expert at? So I had Dave Hopla, who was freaking amazing, man. Like his talking to him offline, he gave me a bunch of shooting tips, like on how to shoot, and I went to the park and I tried them all, and it made complete sense, man. Like a lot of what he says is a little unorthodox, but it does actually work.
What did he tell you?
Like one of his things was like people always say, be straight up when you go for a shot, and he's like, I never teach NBA players that. I always go lead with your shooting foot. So you should be like, if you're a right-handed player, you should be facing a little to the left of the rim so that your right hand is aligned with it.
Yeah.
And he really emphasized that point because one of my favorite jump shooters was Allen Houston from the Detroit and from New York Knicks. And his shot is actually considered unorthodox because he goes straight up. And he goes like, if you're like a middling shooter, and if you're struggling with your shot, the way to get better is not necessarily to emulate your best NBA player. The way to get better is to actually do this little unorthodox thing, because this will help you more. And a bunch of things about the shooting window, which he talks about. So there's that. And then when the Black Lives Matter movement kicked off, I think I interviewed a couple of academics who had really researched the area,
I believe George Day, professor.
Yeah, George Day, UFT, yeah. George Day, and Ed Wagema from UFT was there too. So I think they offered a voice which I think was missing at the time, and it was like a long interview. It was like an hour, full hour. So I try to give those voices. I'm trying to get a couple of local Toronto artists to come on and talk about Raptors because some of their work is pretty beautiful. So I don't know. Stay tuned. Yeah. It's not a weekly thing.
Like, I look forward to your interview with Cardinal Offishell, man.
Oh my God.
And then the videos. You're hopping into the YouTube game, man.
I am, because I find it, because I find whenever you are analyzing basketball, you know, we often squeeze in weasel words. Like weasel words are like, sometimes, maybe, you know, those little caveats you add in into your writing so that you don't get called out for it. You know, the English language is full of those weasel words people throw in there, like, you know, perhaps, maybe, something, all these things. So I kind of wanted to get away from that and actually look at some actual basketball footage and give people some examples on what I mean. Like, basically, when I'm not a good enough writer where I can convey everything I want to convey in words. So I thought video is a good way to kind of overlay that with the words. And I think it's worked out, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback from it. And people find it helpful. So check out Raptors Republic's YouTube channel. We're trying to invest in it more. And by invest, I mean like we're trying to put a lot of hours in it. So
yeah,
follow it. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it's no longer just a podcast audio with a static image.
Well, for years, it used to be.
Well, we had the post game interviews too for a while.
Yeah, because because I wrote a script which went to Raptors.com, stole their videos, and posted on our YouTube channel, and you know that was our thing. But then I was like, man, come on, we can do better than this.
I mean, the game is the game, man. I mean, there's also, you know, people, there's already an economy for that. So no, it's good. I mean, I enjoyed the play breakdowns. Like, that's my favorite thing to watch on YouTube, in addition to like just like weird hocus pocus geography stuff. You know, stuff like, oh, what if Korea, South Korea, North Korea reunited? And I'm like, yeah, I'll spend 10 minutes watching this. And they're like, yeah, this is not a great idea. And I'm like, okay, fair enough.
Not a big fan of Stephen A? Stephen A's rage videos?
I don't really watch those rage videos. Although today I had to indulge. After the Clippers loss, I had, you know, you just got to dig in once in a while. It's like ice cream. You're not going to eat it every day. But once in a while, you just got to dig in. Get a spoonful of Stephen A yelling at Max Kellerman for saying Kawhi is better than Kobe. Which, I mean, come on, man. Why did you say that?
I don't think when whoever that guy is you mentioned, whenever he said that, he was purposely lying to himself to get a reaction. Probably. That's the thing.
But no, the basketball videos, the breakdowns is great. I really enjoy it. You know, you obviously are a very knowledgeable basketball mind. It's not overly complicated. You're not trying to explain what a 21 pistol action is or anything like that. You're just showing in detail what people are doing, what they can be doing better. And the OG video is a great example of that. So, Zerar, man, one of the OGs of this game. I appreciate you for everything, really, but especially here for your time to come on the podcast. And, thanks for wrapping up the season with me, man.
Anytime, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.